You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to another episode of Nightmare on Film Street, the podcast, presented by... I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Did I do good?
You did great.
Was that great?
Yeah, you did awesome.
I just wanted people to know that it was a podcast.
I was gonna ask why you had to point that
out. In case they didn't know, they were just like, wait, what is this in my ear?
Is this the radio play, Nightmare on Film Street? Presented by Roma Wines.
And Fangoria, which is episode number 2. I'm excited. Pumped.
Okay. Yep.
It's time month. We're talking about time. It's about time.
Don't. That's right. All February long. February this year is a leap year. Which means
it's a long ass month. Right? Still shorter than the average month, but long for February.
February's the worst month of the year. We can all agree on that. The weather's awful. It's like the planet is trying to kill us. And it has one extra day this year, and it might succeed. Maybe that's all it needed. Like, every 4 years, it just works up enough energy, just like, one more snowstorm, and they're gone.
I love the idea of a leap year in general, and I know this is kind of a tangent I'm going on, but it just shows that our math is bad, and instead of fixing the math at, like, a societal level, we'll just like, we'll just add a day every few years or so, we'll catch up.
Yeah, we'll just let it bank up until we get a holiday out of it.
We are telling time incorrectly enough that a whole day is needed to get us back on track.
Well, I mean, it depends how nitty gritty you want to get about time, because like when we have like really terrible tsunamis, they actually affect time.
What?
Yeah. So like one of the last gigantic tsunamis we had in Japan shook the earth so heavily, from what I understand, or was such a powerful weather pattern that it affected the Earth's rotation to a slight degree, which in turn affects time by like 0.0012 of a second. There are a lot of factors is what I'm getting at.
That is horrifying, I guess, so it is the right tone for the podcast.
We're calling February Leap Fear Month here at Nightmare on Film Street, so we're talking time travel, time paradoxes, time loops. We're getting into the terror of time and all of that means. We've got a whole host of editorials over at nofspodcast.com, but this month we specifically will be covering those topics here on the podcast, beginning with 2007's Time Crimes and 2009's Triangle. Before we get started, though, Kim, I gotta ask you, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, John, and all the fellas listening, just a reminder that it's Valentine's Day this weekend. Friday is Valentine's Day, which, by the Blumhouse calendar, means we're getting a new Blumhouse film. For some reason, the last few years, they've staked a claim on Valentine's Day, so we'll be getting Fantasy Island this weekend, which we'll probably check out. I don't know when we're going to see it, but I'm sure we'll find time.
Well, we've got some birthdays we need to go to for, like, 90-year-old grandmas.
Grandma's turning 90!
Oh, it's a big year, right? So we might not be able to see that opening day, but we're going to check it out. I do like that they've taken sort of, like, this fan theory of Fantasy Island. Like, I don't think Fantasy Island is as nice as it is on the surface, like, as it appears. Like, there has been a long-standing theory that it's actually, like, a hellscape.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah!
So I don't know anything about Fantasy Island, so I might want to browse up the Wikipedia page on the... Okay?
I think you're fine.
Okay?
You go to an island, you fulfill your fantasies.
And it's bad!
You know what you should do is look up some comedians talking about Fantasy Island. That'll paint a better picture.
Okay. It was a TV show, right?
It was a TV show.
Okay.
But I mean, Valentine's Day is also movie day for Fangoria. You probably heard at the top of the show. VFW is finally coming to a theater near you, but also VOD if it's not at a theater near you.
This is one of your favorites from last year, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, it was. This movie kicks so much ass. Like, it's so hard to talk about because I don't necessarily want to overhype it, but this movie rocks. It has some of the coolest old dudes just kicking the shit out of new, like, mutant punk bikers. It's my kind of movie. And, like, When have you not wanted to see Stephen Lang just beat the shit out of a bunch of guys?
I like him.
Yeah, he's the best, right? And he kicks a lot of ass in this movie.
What did we watch him young in recently?
Manhunter.
Oh, right. That may or may not be coming up.
But yeah, once again, VFW from Joe Bigos hits theaters this weekend. And, you know, I hope those theaters are ready to hit back because this movie's throwing punches. And it's great.
Speaking of movies throwing punches, perfect segue. The Hunt from Blumhouse and Universal is back on. I don't know if you caught it. There is a new trailer and a brand new poster. And it is so sassy. I fucking love it.
New favorite poster.
It's so great.
Oh, yeah.
All of these angry quotes.
This movie's dangerous. This movie's awful. People should not see this garbage.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the movie. I'm happy it's getting a release because all the politics aside, I do not think art should be censored. And I understood the backlash that caused them to pull it, but I'm glad that they've reworked and rejived to get it out there because we shouldn't be passing judgment on movies we have not seen yet.
Right. And by all accounts, from the people that have seen it, it's an incredibly satirical movie from what I'm hearing.
Well, that's the thing, too. And I got that from the first few trailers I saw anyways, is that it's a commentary on the division that's happening right now. So no matter what side of the division you're on, you got to admit that it exists.
I mean, it seems a lot like... It seems like it exists in the same world as The Purge, and we all seem to be fine with The Purge.
The Purge movies are awesome. Does fucking weird, crazy, dark shit.
And we got another one coming! Oh, I can't wait.
But yeah, so The Hunt is coming this March. It's coming out this March.
Yeah, not to keep talking about trailers, but did you guys see that new Saw trailer? Spiral? The Chris Rock, Samuel Jackson Saw movie? I'm very excited for this one.
It looks like it's going to be closer to the first Saw movie with the detective cop procedural bit. We did get a few glimpses of some like flashbacky stuff. Chris Rock with a saw, a literal handsaw.
Hey, you got
to
do it.
But yeah, I'm excited to see where they go with it because they're trying to refresh the franchise a little bit. So I don't think this is going to be directly as violent and gory and gross as the later Saw movies got. But I mean, it's got to have the hallmark elements of a Saw film. We're gonna have some traps, which is, I mean, that's what we're all there for.
I'm ready for some games.
Give me the traps.
Yeah, oh, if there isn't a puppet, I'm rioting. I need that creepy doll riding a tricycle.
I don't think there's gonna be, I don't know.
You don't?
I don't know. No. We're gonna get the spiral in some sense, I'm assuming, which is the eye of the puppet, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a couple camera lights or something.
There's at least gonna be a cameo. Like, we're gonna go into his lair, his workshop, and there's gonna be a little doll, and he's gonna be like, the fuck is this? And that's about it. Like, this guy's definitely fucked up. He's got dolls.
But before we get to this week's movies, we do have some patrons to shout out.
That's right. I want to give a quick shout out to our most recent patron supporters, Bradley, Jess, Josh, Bradley 2, Jess 2, Josh 2, Bradley 3? Okay. I see what's happening here. You've found a time machine and you've figured out how to game the system and create multiple accounts, and congratulations on you. I'm so proud that what you took the most powerful piece of technology there is out there, multiplied yourselves to support the show a little extra. That's so kind. Thank you so much, Bradley, Jess, and Josh. I hope you enjoy all of the hours of bonus content available to you at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
But without further ado, it is time to talk about time. Warning, there's going to be a lot of these puns throughout this episode, I'm sure of it.
You don't want to say the title of the movie?
Coming up, Time Crimes from 2007.
We'll be right back. From 2007, Time Crimes is currently sitting at an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 3 out of 4 from Roger Ebert, 68% on Metacritic, and 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd. This was, in my memory, one of the best time travel movies that I had ever seen. And this is maybe a good spot to say, I'm kind of a nerd for time travel movies.
You're such a nerd for time travel.
I like loops.
You've been trying to get this movie on the podcast for a while now.
I have presented so many different pairings of this movie.
So the weird thing, and I'm going to say this for both the movies we talk about on this episode, time travel movies are actually...
A little boring.
When you're looking at them from the middle of the movie outwards, like, it's hard to get perspective of, because you're not through all the loops yet, and they're still laying groundwork. When we were halfway through the movie, I was like, why are we doing this on a horror podcast?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a little strange. It's more of a sci-fi thing. It does get dark, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, and we've got some Invisible Man moments. So
oh,
like,
see, well, there you go. I had originally, I was like, let's pair it with the Invisible Man. It'll be so great. Bandagey bad guys. And then I was like, well, let's do it with the Dead Zone. They both got scissors for weapons. Like, the comparisons got very thin. Very thin. And I'm happy we're doing it now.
Yeah, I think what we've paired it with is actually pretty good. Time travel, baghead versus bandage head time travel.
Yeah, yeah. This couldn't have worked out better.
So it worked out really well.
Sometimes the things come to those who wait.
You just gotta work on that loop-de-loop.
Gotta be patient. Gotta spend some time on it.
So this was my first time watching Time Crimes.
Yeah.
Halfway through the movie, I was like, I am not enjoying this. Like, I got a little bored halfway through, which is my own fault, because this movie pays off in a really fun and well-thought-out way. Congratulations to time travel movies in general, because you always seem to be underestimated at the midpoint. And then, surprise, surprise, you know your theoretical time travel.
The problem is when you've seen a few time travel movies, because they have similar beats. And you know there's a groundwork we have to lay and follow. And I don't know if that's... Well, I would say that's probably true about every time travel movie that's ever been made, but definitely in the last while, there seems to be a template that we kind of stick to, that we have to, and like it's in that twist at the end where like things start to get very interesting.
Yeah. The cool thing, though, about, and I'll give this movie credit because it does it very well, is that we all know that when we're watching a movie that's going to have time loops, that the second loop or the third loop, if we're going that deep, is going to affect the first loop in some way. So we're very aware that there are things that aren't going to be explained in the first pass around and even the second pass around. But this movie does a really great job at making us forget about unanswered questions. Like, particularly the moment that surprised me the most was when Hector 2 is run off the road. It didn't even occur to me that it was Hector 3 that ran Hector 2 off the road.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It buries its secrets in a really great way.
That's a really good description for it. It's funny because when that comes, I had also kind of forgotten who had done that. But for I don't know what it is about like a hit and run where you're just like, it's a movie. It happens in real life too. Whatever. Yeah, it's just like, somebody got smashed and then they took off.
And it also, this movie uses comedy in a really fun way because Hector is such a great character to get wrapped up in a time travel movie because he's lazy.
He's
dumb.
Yep.
And he's kind of thick-headed. The whole reason why he has to do this loop three times is because he's so dense. Because he keeps messing up. But the very nature that he needs to do it three times is why it happened in the beginning. Like, the whole thing about time travel is it's a perpetual loop. Like, it exists because it exists.
That is, yeah. Yeah, it's that's a tough one to deal with. Because there's no start to this. It starts with Hector sitting down in the lawn chair. In the lawn chair, comfortable. And he sees a woman in the forest in binoculars.
And it's after we watch him, like, have a nap and his wife builds a table. Yeah. And he's just...
Is so productive.
We don't have a high opinion of him in general. Like, she's going to get dinner because he's too lazy to go out again. And then he spies on some woman in the woods, like, undressing. And then he goes chasing after her, which kicks off this time travel escapade.
Hey, here's the thing, though. It's not... I think it's not just that it's a woman undressing in the woods. There's just something very weird about it, right?
Well, he can't see the full spectrum of, like, what's happening in the woods, but he sees a woman.
But she's got her hair in her face. Like, the way she's standing, it's very odd and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there isn't a moment where he grabs his phone because he's like, I better call the cops if something weird happens, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too nice to Hector. He definitely goes out. He doesn't say anything to his wife about it, right?
No.
She comes back. Like, if we were sitting there, I'd be like, you gotta fucking see this. I have no goddamn idea what's happening in the woods right now, but it might be a murder. We need to get the authorities out here immediately.
Yeah, but instead he goes out there, and while he comes upon this body, she's still alive, she's just knocked out, but she's completely naked, and he's throwing sticks at it, as Hector would do. And then it's really jumbled, like, we don't see a lot, but he gets stabbed with a pair of scissors, and he starts running through the woods. And then we see this horror movie character, like, a guy with bandaged face and a trench coat, and it's terrifying.
It is one of the best images ever. Hector is hiding behind a tree, and he's trying to find his attacker, who's a little further down the forest path, I guess, and he's using the binoculars to find him, and when he finally traces onto this guy who's turned away, when he turns back and sort of makes eye contact with Hector, he's got his hands up around his eyes in the fashion of binoculars. There's just, like, how does this person know so much about you? Like, it is very creepy.
Yeah.
And that's the image that made me seek this movie out so hard back in 2007.
And the fun thing about it is the whole bandage visual, the character that they've made, they explain it so simply later on in the film, but it's such an extreme, like, classic horror silhouette.
Yeah.
It is the Invisible Man.
Yeah, it's the Invisible Man. It's Dark Man. It's got Universal Monster written all over it.
Yeah, and it's, like, noir. It's very stylized type of villain character, but this movie isn't that kind of movie.
No,
so
he does not, and he's got a weapon. Like, he's got scissors with him. Like, he has a defined weapon.
His appearance in the random woods at the beginning of this film doesn't fit anything.
Nothing at all.
It's like he popped out of space. Like, he's just in a different movie, the wrong film.
Yeah.
And then when he gets explained, and it's so simple, but the reason why he becomes this villain is because he already existed. So it's just like, it's so interesting when you think about it, because even the binoculars moment where he does the binocular eyes to scare Hector, he's doing it because it already happened in the past.
Yeah, so Hector is run off by the man in the bandages up to a silo where there is a man whose cast name is just a young man. He's a scientist. He's played by the director, Nacho Vigalondo. But in an effort to hide from the bandaged man, he's going to put him in this machine and where he'll be safe. And because Hector's dumb and scared, I mean,
it's
realistically,
such an idiot.
He's very scared is what it comes down to. He hops in, and then moments later, all of a sudden, it's daytime again, and he's in the past, where he discovers that he has time-traveled for a few hours. No, not even that long, really.
No, just earlier in the day.
Yeah, like, let's maybe call it an hour at most. He's supposed to sit still because this scientist person has essentially figured out what's happened, because he had just turned the machine on 20 seconds ago, and then this fucking guy appears into it, which is so great. That is, like, one of my favorite things to think about.
That's a great theory about time travel, though, because that would happen, essentially, like,
oh, definitely.
The second it's created, we've already done all the time traveling.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
It would be so annoying the moment you realize that you were right. Because people would just be coming back nonstop, person after person, on vacation, expecting
you to
usher. Oh,
so true. Because it would already be commercialized at that point.
Yeah. Oh, man. It would be the worst. It would be the biggest mistake of your life. And you would also get, like, a Nobel Peace Prize or something, right?
Maybe well, and then you'd have people fleeing from the apocalypse into your time. Right? So he would have a steady line of, like, refugees from the future.
Yeah.
Refugees, tourists, it would be everybody.
It's gonna ruin the economy.
So Hector 2.
Hector 2.
And so, I have to say, they do a great job at differentiating the different timelines of Hectors, And that's how this bandaged character comes into play.
Well, yeah, because he can't see himself. He can't, at least before he knows what's going on. Hector 1 can never know about time travel.
Well, because Hector 1 doesn't know about time travel.
That's exactly it, right?
If he saw himself in that first instance, then fine, that's part of the loop. But because he never saw himself, he can't see himself.
And that's kind of the problem with Hector 2. He doesn't really notice, he doesn't really realize it right away, but he has to orchestrate the rest of the day. At first, he's just annoyed. This young kid, this punk, tells him that he can't leave. You gotta stay here. You know, we'll get a hold of Hector 1, and we'll put him in the machine. We'll rewrite the wrongs that we just created, and everything will go back to normal. No big deal. But because Hector is a friggin' dummy, and he's just like, this is stupid. I don't want to stick around here. It's weird.
I'm going to call my wife.
So because he leaves, now he has to become the bandaged man. And now he has to be, and then he realizes that he has to be the person who forces this girl into the forest to strip, to lure Hector.
Yeah, and it becomes this weird, rapey thing in the sake of time travel.
This movie, from her perspective, is so fucked.
She has the worst day.
Yeah, oh,
well,
of course.
And she's got the really worst day. But yeah, she's riding her bike, and she just ends up roped into this really fucking weird story just to convince this dunderhead to go and be time traveled.
Yeah, and the whole time he's not staring at her. He's got binoculars trained over on Hector 1 at the house. He's like, all right, I'll take your clothes off. All right, now turn your head. It's fine. Everything's going to be okay. I'm not going to hurt you, and you can put them all back on when you're done. Like, it is just bizarre and weird and strange, and nothing seems normal. This guy is just covered in bandages. And she's just trying to help him. She's just a good Samaritan.
Yeah, because he was in a car accident.
Yeah. And so, like, from here, this is where the movie starts to lag a little bit. Like, once you have the realization, like, oh, Hector
he's gotta
is the bandage
yeah.
man. Like, that's cool. Dig that. But then it kind of, like, then it slows down.
And yeah, because then we watch Hector 2 basically orchestrating Hector 1's day to get him to the science lab to get in the goop.
Which is fine. That's okay. It needs to happen. It's the same with every time travel movie, and it's where you figure you've got the rest of the movie clocked out.
Yeah.
And you're wrong, always.
Yeah, you're always wrong.
Well, hopefully. Not always, but hopefully. Because, oh, the introduction of Hector 3.
Oh my god, there's a third Hector.
And because things go super wrong for Hector 2.
Yes.
In Hector 2's efforts to sort of have a normal day, rewrite all the wrongs, and get back to normal, he winds up back at his house where he's chasing the girl from the forest who's gotten away. And he chases her up onto the rooftop, and just as she's trying to get away and the cop sirens are just in the distance, you can hear that she has called the police. He accidentally knocks her off the roof, where she falls to her death, and we realize, not the girl from the forest, it's actually his wife, Clara.
And her neck is broken. Yeah. So Hector, now with the Hector 2, now with the power of time travel, marches back to the science lab and demands to be put back in the goop.
Yeah, see, like, what's good about this movie is creating the motivations for the time travel, because at first it's just stupidity, right? It's fear. It's protection. Mm-hmm. I need to get away. And he's sort of ensnared in a trap that he can't escape. Like, the whole thing seems a little strange and orchestrated, and the people who are trying to help him have a little bit of malevolence to them. But that's only because he's the only one not in the know. He has to go in so that they orchestrate it that way. But when it comes to Hector 2, now he has to go back because he's learned the power of this technology to rewrite the wrongs.
Yeah, like, now he's got the intention of actually butterfly affecting a correction made to the second loop.
Which is impossible. We all know this. Based on movie logic.
I mean, theoretically.
Are you sure? Because this movie proves that you can't. Or it doesn't even necessarily prove that you can. But that is the concern of the young man, the scientist, who tells him you can't go back, you can't change the past. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do about that. But Hector 2, having just basically killed his wife, doesn't fucking care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it tears the fabric of time and space itself. He's got to go back.
Well, and if you have this new superhero ability,
yeah,
and he doesn't have any of the weight of it, like, he's not the scientist, he didn't create time travel, he just got wrapped up in it, and he's learned of it today, and then the worst possible scenario has just happened to him.
Yeah. What's he got
to lose
now? He's
going back in it.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah.
This movie does something so fucking brilliant too that I absolutely love. When Hector 2 decides that he's going to go back in time and become Hector 3, there's only one way to do it. He has to go back before Hector 1 appears, and he hides behind a cabinet. And then we have this great zoom, like it's the end of Fight Club, and we're re-seeing earlier scenes from the movie where there's a fucking arm sticking out from behind that cabinet. And like, I knew it, because I've seen this movie before. This was Kim's first time. I looked for that arm when Hector 1 went back for the first time, and it's Hector 2, and the fucking arm is there. And I'm like, yes, this movie rocks.
Oh, man.
This is where it becomes like Back to the Future world, right? Because we are seeing Hector 3 sort of standing back enough and watching Hector 1 and Hector 2 sort of scrambling around. That actually might be my favorite part about time travel movies, is the people that are just like sneaking off in the background behind the shadows, trying not to get noticed, that are watching the movie happen in front of them.
Yeah.
I fucking love that.
Because he's hands off. He knows Hector 2 is successful in getting Hector 1 into the machine, so his role doesn't come into play until they return to the house later that night.
Yeah, it's each iteration of the time travel, of the person doing the time traveling, if they're going back and doing the exact same loop, has more info about the day. So it's like they feel like they can master it more, but by going back, they're creating more problems. So they're actually in a weaker position than they were as...
Oh, John, you're getting too theoretical for me here. Okay. Oh, God.
Well, it's kind of like photocopying a photocopy and photocopying
that.
Oh,
like the butt gets blurrier and
blurrier.
Yeah,
the butt gets blurrier and blurrier. It no longer looks like a heart. It's not a great Christmas card. It's just smudge.
It's just a blurry butt.
It's just a blurry butt. And no one wants to get Chinese food with a blurry butt. Oh, man. But the interesting thing about Hector 3 is that he has that realization that there's no way to succeed. I
love Hector 3. The growth of Hector in this movie is so phenomenal.
Yeah.
Because I have so many different opinions of him from these time travel iterations. Like, he's a dunderhead. He's bumbling around. He's lazy. There's so many great moments where he has to, like, sit down.
Because he's too tired.
Or he's supposed to run and he doesn't even do that. And he's just like, Hector! Like, it's a life or death thing! And he's like, turn the lights off. I can't make it to the silo. Like, Hector is... a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
And by the end, he is so bruised up. He is so injured.
Oh, yeah.
He's bleeding.
He's essentially been in two car accidents.
Yeah, he's got black eyes. He looks disgusting.
His jaw is so fucked. Like, his jaw is completely offset.
And also, his wife is dead. And so he has just got nothing left to lose. And he's so cold and he's so beyond at that point that when he gets down to business, like, he's a different version of the character we started with. And they've done a really successful job at, like, changing him to the point of just business. Like, time travel is old hat to Hector 3.
And he hasn't really time traveled all that much. It's just, like, an evening.
It's an afternoon!
Yeah! So, like...
yeah, I had an alternate title for this movie. It's Hector is no good, very long, very bad day.
That's so good. I mean, that could work about both of them. Like, if only our lead from the triangle had an H name, like Heather instead of Jess. Oh, well. It's so funny that Hector has such growth as a character, because he is only repeating such a short period. It's not like he gets to go back and relive his whole goddamn life and become a new person.
And, like, make the table for his wife. He doesn't even do that!
No, and in the end, he destroys that table! Oh, they also do a really good job of showing that. Like, Hector 2 understands how pathetic Hector 1 is. So you see moments where, like, you're seeing behind the scenes where Hector 2, bandaged up, scares Hector 1 in a window. But he doesn't really do anything. He just, like, hey. But to Hector 1, who's just, like, full of adrenaline and shit, that's terrifying. And then we watch Hector 2 sit down.
Wait.
Take a break. Yeah. And then just, like, stroll in. And also, like, when he attacks the scientist, he, like, whaps him with the crowbar. But it's, like, the lightest tap. Because it's, like, he's too lazy to even be angry. But they do a great job of sort of differentiating them as well in their looks. Like, Hector 1 has a gray sweater and a lot of sweat. Hector 2, obviously, is in the trench coat and the bandages for the majority of his loop. But Hector 3, immediately when he gets out of the... of the time travel tank, just rips off his gray sweater. There's a black long sleeve shirt underneath.
Well, and he's also wounded beyond repair.
Well, yeah, I guess that is true. That's the first thing you'd notice, but it's smart, because, like, you just get to see
Yeah.
You can pick up easier who is.
Yeah, and Triangle does it really smartly, too. And I think that's part of the reason why we have the bandaged, bagged character.
Yeah.
Partly because they can't see themselves, but also because it helps differentiate the iterations of that person in their time loop.
To us, yeah.
Yeah.
So Hector 3 has a bit of a dark night of the soul. He realizes that this isn't going to work. It's all going to fail. Until he gets back home, because he starts to see a completely different angle. That's the other interesting thing. So Hector 1 is almost all fear the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's easily manipulatable. Hector 2 only really experiences fear and anguish for a short period, and it completely colors everything for him. But when Hector 3 shows up, and he's now with his wife and the girl from the forest, sort of in tandem, at the house, he gets a completely different perspective of what's going on. And he realizes very quickly that his wife actually isn't in danger.
As long as he's there. As long as Hector 3 is there.
Yeah, and this is where the movie takes the darkest fucking turn. Because he immediately knows what he has to do. He has to essentially close the loop. And the only way to do that is, you know, rather the only way to save his wife, in his eyes, is to have somebody else die, because he realizes that his wife never actually died. He just convinced himself, Hector 2, that it was his wife, so he would go back and do the loop to become Hector 3 and save the fucking day. Now, I say save the day, he's a monster.
He does have to kill somebody.
He has to fucking kill that girl in the forest who was just trying to help him out. This is why you don't help people. You just leave people wounded on the side of the road. You look out for yourself.
You
and
might get
no one
time
else.
Looped to death.
You might get time looped to death.
Yeah, he has to orchestrate this girl upstairs to the attic. He cuts her hair, puts his wife's jacket on her, so she looks like the wife.
Yeah, and he instructs her too. Like, okay, you know, when I say go, you have to sneak upstairs. There's a window. Go out, you'll be, you know, in the attic, get out onto the roof. He's already put a ladder there because it's integral to the loop. Like, he has to see the ladder and think that she's escaped. Hector 2 has to see the ladder and think that she's escaped. But there is a fucking beat before he sends that girl off that is just so heartbreaking and evil. Like, it's so much wrapped up into one moment. It is all of the emotion that Hector 1, 2, and 3 have experienced, sort of crystallized in just looking into this girl in the forest's eyes.
Ugh.
Where he just grabs her hands and he looks at her, he says, you're beautiful. And he goes, okay, go. And it's just like, it's so, that fucking scene is so hard because he understands exactly what he's doing, but he's got no other choice. In his eyes. I mean, like, he does technically have a choice, but it's the only, like, the darkest possible conclusion for this story is the only way for him to see any light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what he's going to tell the cops when they show up.
I know, because there's just this dead woman.
Yeah, and he's fucked up! Like, how do you explain, like, 8 hours worth of injuries when your wife went out for groceries? I guess you say a guy with bandages broke into my house, beat the fuck out of me. I guess he was chasing this girl who was also trying to escape and fell off the roof.
The ending is also really satisfying, how he pulls them both up chairs.
Where they were sitting earlier.
Yeah, and they're just, like, they sit there for this, like, moment of peace while the sirens are, like, closing in the distance.
And she's like, should we go inside? He goes, no, it's fine. We have a little while until the rain comes. Because he already knows, because Hector 2 is out there right now. Like, they can't really go anywhere. He just knows that they're safe where they are.
And then hear the girl die.
Oh, it's rough.
Yeah.
It's a good ending. It's a really,
It is really fulfilling. It is. And that's the weird thing about time travel movies is if you asked me for, like, a live update on my rating, I would start high.
Yeah,
and
then dip down.
Woo, time travel! And then I would get inevitably bored and think I have the movie convinced. All right, have the movie figured out. And then right back up.
Yeah, I love where this movie goes. And I'm sorry that this episode has maybe seemed a little bit more like a recap than a discussion, but
it's hard to talk about a time travel movie without going through it.
Yeah, especially if you haven't seen it. And I hope you did. I mean, we got this movie at the dollar store for
$2.
It was good. We got it with Let the Right One In for $1.50. I don't know why that one was a little cheaper.
Also, I have to say the DVD copy that we bought of this movie had some really great fucking trailers at the beginning.
Mostly for Let the Right One In.
Ooh, I loved it. Like,
and HDNet.
Oh, yeah.
Ask your cable provider for HDNet. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, it was great. Like, movies that went on DVD and you're like, nobody bought this.
No.
I like this trailer.
Yeah, now available only on DVD. Like,
wrong turn 12.
Yeah, there was that movie that seemed like Joyride.
Oh, yeah, and it wasn't Joyride.
No, it was Shuttle. Like, what happens if you get on a shuttle bus?
The wrong airplane shuttle.
Yeah, and the shuttle bus driver is
evil for some reason.
It looked good.
No, it didn't.
It looked like our kind of movie.
It did. So what is your rating on Time Crime?
This is tough because, yeah, I think that middle lull really paints how I wanted to rate the movie, but it shouldn't. And it starts great and it ends strong. And like that lull is intentional and it's got a lot of like building that it needs to do for its story. I am giving Time Crimes a 3 out of 4.
Jonathan.
Hmm?
I'm giving Time Crimes a 3.5 out of 4.
You know why? It's your first time.
That's true. That's true. You weren't wowed by the time.
Time travel movies are hard to watch second and third times.
How many times have you seen Time Crimes?
I've seen this movie a few times. The very first time I saw it, I watched it like at work. And like I shouldn't have been, but I was like, fuck it, I'm watching it. I've watched it on a laptop beside you. I honestly think I've made you see this movie before.
But, I have not seen it.
Okay, that's cool. That's great. I'm glad you really like it.
I did really like it. Hector is a wonderful character, like the perfect character for a time travel movie because he's such an idiot.
Yeah, if we didn't have a horror movie podcast and this was just a regular movie podcast, you know, a boring movie podcast, I would have paired
it. A lame movie podcast.
Super lame movie podcast. I would have paired it with Primer because Primer, I think, is maybe one of the most complex time travel movies. It's very much like Time Crimes, but imagine like 30 loops.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's two people that are doing it to try and fix one mistake, but then you find out that maybe one person was going back and traveling again without the other person.
Oh, shit.
So it's a very complex movie, and it's very hard to crack, and I don't think I have figured it out.
Ooh.
But if you are in the mood for a time travel movie,
I am.
I would love to watch that one with you tonight.
Okay. Is it dark, though?
It's not dark enough for the podcast,
okay.
But it is dark.
Okay.
You'd see it at a genre film festival.
All right.
Not enough nightmare? Become a patron of Nightmare on Film Street to instantly access hours of bonus episodes. Unlock frightfully good rewards like shout-outs on the show, stickers, and more. Only at patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street.
But instead, we're going to talk about a movie that's got a ghost ship. We're going to talk about...
Seagulls.
We're going to talk about evil seagulls. I want that on a t-shirt, by the way. Evil seagull? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got Robert Pattinson on the back. We're going to talk about 2009's The Triangle.
I think it's just Triangle.
Oh, shit.
Triangle. I tried to do your voice.
2009's Triangle.
You know what I do when I have a bad dream? Close my eyes, and I think of something nice.
Hello? Where is everybody?
You enter a place you have never been.
I recognize this corridor.
Everything you see, you have seen before.
And that's what's going on. Everything that happened to you before. He's dead! Change the pattern. You changed the pattern and we're not trapped. Who are you?
Triangle from 2009. Directed by Christopher Smith, who also directed Creep. Not that one. that other one. That one about a subway. Actually, we have an article about it on the website. It's really good. Triangle is currently sitting at an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb, and 3.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd. I find it hard to believe there's no Metacritic rating, but
this is the world we live in.
So I saw this movie, I think, relatively soon after it was released.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I remembered really liking it. I had not seen it since then.
I remember really underestimating it. Like, oh, sure, boat movie.
And then it hooked me because it was just like, yo, you like time travel, bro? We got loops. We got loops for days in this movie.
Is this movie even in the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I don't even know.
I don't know.
They don't, maybe.
Maybe the boat came from the Bermuda Triangle.
Maybe. Maybe it's just like that cloud formation. Ooh, that was a hard one. Maybe that weather pattern that they went through is just the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yeah. There was that weather pattern.
They're in Florida.
They did have a weather.
Well, how about that?
The weather done did it.
I fucking called this movie when we watched. Now, granted, we have seen it before. Don't get me wrong. But there is a moment at the beginning of this movie where, like, the music swells and everybody's getting on the boat and they're packing. It's sort of optimistic. Like, let's...
Oh, yeah, and, like, the biggest dick in the
sailing
room.
Yeah, yeah. Big time travel energy. I was like, this is the end shot of the movie. Like, these are the fun... This is end credits right
after
this.
Final moments, guys.
I waited at the finish line of this movie for my applause. No one gave it to me.
We all just rolled our eyes. And by we all, I mean it was just me and John watching this movie. I had to roll my eyes for a whole theater worth of people.
I live on that energy.
Time travel.
Time crimes. No, that doesn't work anymore, right?
No.
The movie's actually there. I wanted to do this movie.
We have an episode called Time Crimes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wanted to do Time Crimes in the podcast so bad.
And instead I made him do the butterfly effect.
No, well, at that point...
You didn't talk to me for weeks.
I just didn't think it was ever going to happen. I'm like, all right, fine, let's kiss it goodbye. We'll just... It's a great name. It's like when you're trying to name a band in high school. Like,
I thought you were going to say, like, a baby.
You throw away a lot of babies before you get the right name. No, in high school, when you're trying to name a band, this is the exact conversation. Oh, man, what about, like, this? You're like, that's a really cool album title name, but not a good band name.
Is that how you say no to your bandmates without it, like... your band falling apart?
Basically,
like,
yeah.
So you don't break up? Like, no, you have bad ideas. You're not allowed to write the lyrics.
That's kind of what it comes down to. Oh, boy.
What was your worst band name of all your band names?
Like, actual band name that we used?
Yeah. Or working band name.
Ooh.
Anything that got written down at the top of a piece of lined piece of paper.
I don't remember a lot of the ones that didn't stick, but I was in... Oh, man, this is dangerous. Like, what if it's a MySpace page that still exists? I was in a band in high school called Ignominy,
liked that band name.
It's not that bad, but like you have to
explain
it.
You just
gotta
get a good metal font.
You need the font. That's the thing. And like,
can you imagine it in Courier? Like, oh, they thesaurus.
Comic Sans Ignominy. Like, actually, to be perfectly honest, using Comic Sans for a band name is ignominious. I think that's the term.
Ignominious.
Sure.
What does ignominy mean?
It's the act of embarrassing yourself in public. Which
really?
Which I thought was so perfect for a band.
I love that. That's so not metal that it's metal.
It was meta metal. Yeah.
Meta metal.
There we go. Heavy meta.
I like it.
Thank
we
you.
We had an episode called Heavy Meta, didn't we?
We sure did.
It's all for full circle. Like time travel.
Well, time is a flat circle, and here we are. The Triangle is a
not
movie.
A circle.
You know what? Fuck that. No, what I want to talk about is the 20 minutes where they first show up on the boat. So we've got a bunch of people who apparently don't know each other. What is Jess's relationship to the captain of this boat who has invited her to go sailing?
Friends. But like
how?
I don't know. Like,
I get the impression she works at a diner and he eats at that diner and he was like, you should come on my boat. And she's like, that definitely doesn't sound like a murder plot. I'll be there.
Yeah.
I think that is true.
They're
I think
warm.
That's how they've met.
Yeah.
I think that is.
Because they definitely have romantic tension. Like, he wants to date her.
He's concerned about her son.
Yeah. And he knows that he goes to school every day of the week because it's a special school.
There you go. Yeah.
But then his other boat companions, there's a couple who are, like, kind of snotty. a little snobby, and then they've brought like a blind date sort of for him.
For Greg, yeah.
Yeah, and then, captain. But he's already brought a girl, so then there's just like fifth wheels all around.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, like, you need enough people to get mad to start killing each other on a boat. I'm okay with this setup. But the way everybody talks, it's like almost nobody knows each other. I think Greg knows those two people, and that's it. The other kid he hired. And
I forgot about that kid.
The baby Liamsworth?
Yeah.
Liam Hemsworth? That's the name.
Baby Liamsworth. Yeah, I don't know how he knows anybody. Yeah, maybe he's just there to help, like, put the sail up.
Yeah, it sounds like he's some rich kid who just gave up everything to live on a boat. And he's using the last of his money to buy fuel for the boat and pay for this kid to hoist the sail. And none of that doesn't sound like the beginning of a true crime story. Like, that definitely ends with him murdering that kid at sea. No, sorry. That kid disappearing at sea. That's how that story
ends. Except that he's got kind eyes and he looks like a nice man.
That's very true.
So, they're on this boat for not very long because there's some, like, tensions between who's talking to who and who's steering the boat. But then weather pattern happens.
They get that fucking boat.
Crazy-ass storm and... Oh, we do have time for Jess, our main character, to have a nap.
Yep.
And have a weird dream.
What's up with that nap? Because it's like her mind gets erased during that nap.
I think her mind gets erased from the nap that she has in the cab at the beginning of the movie to the boat. Because I think she's so distraught that she's fugue stating.
We'll get to that.
And so we're in some fugue loops.
Fugue loops.
Part of a full balanced breakfast.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, when she wakes up, they get into this weird weather pattern. The boat tips, and, you know, just as they're out there floating for a few days, a cruise ship comes by, and they're able to get on board.
They just board this empty-ass cruise ship.
Well, they see somebody on there.
They see somebody up top, so, like, being elusive and weird.
Yeah, and it's not like, it doesn't look like a ghost ship.
From the outside.
It's 100% a ghost ship.
It's 1,000% a ghost ship.
But it's not like it's, like, rotting, and there's, like, a ghost face in the stern of it, and there's, like, bodies lashed to the side. Like, it looks relatively inviting, other than the fact that it's just, like, coasting by for no reason. By the way, when he calls the Coast Guard, and I just want to find out if you know this, because it might blow your mind. He says, Coast Guard, you got any, like, weird weather going on? We went from 7 knots to 0. And, you know, they haven't reported anything. Do you know how fast 7 knots is?
No.
So, if I remember correctly...
Is that wind or...
That's the speed. Okay. That's the speed of the boat. Yeah, so it's like kilometers per hour. You judge it by knots, right?
I like that.
And you're going by wind.
Because boats are all about knots. Like, literal knots and figurative knots and speed knots.
I didn't even fucking think about that. That's hilarious. I'm probably wrong. So, anybody out there listening who is a boating person is gonna laugh, but it was explained to me as a child, and I've held onto it as truth.
Clearly fact. Could never Google
that
this.
That it's roughly 2 kilometers or 2 miles per hour, which means they were going 14 miles an hour, 14 kilometers an hour.
That seems fast on a boat.
Does it?
Yeah.
You could run that, right?
No.
You could run 14 kilometers in an hour.
How much is that in miles an hour?
Not that many, I don't think. There's 3-point-something
miles. Yeah, it's probably like 10 kilometers. Miles an hour. That's still kind of fast.
Yeah, I bogged us down with some fun math. Oh, boy. Ugh. Anyway, they get onto a ship, and Jess is like, it's weird. I feel like I've been here before. Doesn't everybody have deja vu? And instead, they're all just, like, going around, looking for their missing friend. And, like, which is kind of a key to this, that when the boat...
Yeah, when the boat tips, they lose a friend.
They lose Heather. And, you know, they're certain that Heather got to the cruise ship.
She also made it on the cruise ship.
Before them!
Because drowning in the ocean isn't a possibility during a storm.
Yeah, not at all. On the other hand, they do see somebody on the ship, so they think maybe that's Heather. But
or
Heather...
somebody who's piloting the boat, maybe.
Yeah, and Heather... Yeah, because they...
Because they don't know it's a ghost ship at this point.
That implies that the ship is empty. Like, oh, Heather! Like, no, that would not be your first thought. Like, you are very clearly dehydrated and dying. Because, yeah, that means that you think it's a ghost ship already.
And throughout, so that they're roaming the halls, they're eating food that they find in this ghost ship, and Jess, our main character, is doing this whole, like, I feel like I know where to go. I feel like I've been here before.
Oh my god, my keys are here on the ground.
And at no point does she go in her pockets and be like, key's gone! Which upset me, because I was like, should you not have 2 keys at this moment?
Yeah, either that or you lost a set of keys when the boat tipped.
Mm.
Right. It's all coming together.
Okay.
Doesn't make sense. But, like, there's also, like, ominous messages written in blood on the mirror that say, go to the theater. Like, oh, that must have been Heather. I think Heather told us to go to the theater. Like, why would she leave a message in blood?
Also, there's no bodies. So, like, and there's no bodies in general. Like, the people that inhabited this boat have just
vanished. Yeah. There's no sign of them whatsoever. You know, and then of course, while Jess is in the dining area, I think Victor comes in and he's very clearly wounded. He starts attacking Jess and she has to sort of fight him until she kills him by sticking her finger in a hole in the back of his head. Yeah, whatever.
Whatever works.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. And when she gets to the theater, she basically sees the rest of her friends killed in front of her. And
being shot by somebody with a bag head from the balcony.
Kind of looks like the dude from The Town That Dreaded Sundown. It's a good look.
It is great for time travel. Yeah. I'm loving these rehashed faceless men.
Yeah. Some brown boat shoes, nice blue suit jacket.
But while they're being shot at, Sally, the snobby girlfriend, tells Jess that she was the one that was shooting at them.
Yeah, like the person who is dying, Greg, I think, says that Jess
shot. She was
shot
the one
me,
that
yeah.
shot him.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like weird stuff happening, yeah. right? And
because
eventually,
time travels.
It becomes a showdown between this bandaged person and Jess, and she, you know, in an armed fight after the
with like axes and crowbars.
Yeah, like at some point, this bandaged person is shooting at her, runs out of bullets, and then just throws the gun.
I loved it.
Yeah. But yeah, knocks her off the boat. Sorry, knocks this person off the boat. We don't know that it's Jess yet, but it's a time travel movie.
Because the time has not traveled yet.
On the other hand, we didn't know it was a time travel movie, so we were just like, wow, they're killing people fast.
Yeah, I was just like, we're running out of people. But then, as soon as Baghead is in the water, being eaten by seagulls, the upturned boat with them,
the entire crew,
comes back.
Yeah, and they're trying to get on the boat. So now Jess is seeing herself and all of her friends in
getting
this
back on the boat.
Yeah. And then it just, you know, like Time Crimes becomes this cat and mouse game, essentially, between her and the group, trying not to be discovered, sort of replaying scenarios and figuring out where her involvement is in their story. She is the person that accidentally injures Victor.
The weird thing here is that we don't have as many orchestrated loops as Time Crimes does. If you ask me how many loops there were in Triangle, I would not be able to answer
there's
you.
There's several?
Because there's a lot of really cool moments where we realize that Jess has been doing this for a very long fucking
very
time.
Long. There is... It's my favorite moment of the movie where she is like hunting down Sally. She's trying to explain to her, don't be scared, don't be afraid, I'm not here to hurt you, you have to calm down. And Sally crawls up to this weird top portion of the boat where she's trying to escape, she's hit a dead end, and there are like 100 dead Sally bodies.
And she's just like crawling backwards through bodies of herself.
Yeah.
It is probably the best moment of the movie.
Oh, it's so nuts because she can't understand what's going on, and then on top of that, she's faced with this pure horror that she just
can't comprehend.
Yeah, it would just break her goddamn mind.
Yeah.
I find that the saddest, I think they all basically die in the exact same places every time.
Yeah.
But something about not cleaning up that body makes me very sad.
Because she doesn't need to. It's out of the way, and she's the only one that'll discover it.
That's true.
And she doesn't have time. The loop happens as soon as it ends.
That is the weird thing. It's like she has to, after each of these loops, she has to go back into the boat, to the theater, to the dining room, get these bodies, and just dispose of them.
Yeah.
Because they can't discover their own dead bodies.
But maybe you can answer this for me, because sure. It's at this point in the movie where I get confused as to why Jess then decides she needs to start killing people off. Because she goes off this because of past version of herself, when she first kills the Baghead version of her.
Yeah.
Which isn't the first loop, but it's the first loop we join her
for
on.
Her, yeah.
Says you have to kill them all in order to see your son, basically.
I don't think we hear her say anything. We just hear, like, muffled talking. Like, she still doesn't know what's going on.
Well, at one point she hears the Baghead version of her saying, kill them all. You have to kill them. Like, they can't board the boat. You have to kill them.
Yeah, and she also comes across a bunch of pieces of paper that are saying the exact same thing.
And she discovers it's her handwriting. It's pretty great.
It is actually a really good moment. Because, like Sally's body, we have hundreds of these pieces of paper.
Well, and the cool thing about that moment is that she would do the same thing every time. So it's not like she's just written this down 100 times. She wrote it once, and then the second time she was writing to compare her handwriting.
Yeah.
The third time she was comparing her handwriting. The fourth time she was comparing her handwriting. So it's a really great loop in that moment. But I don't understand, like, she's killing everybody repetitively on this loop because she's under the impression that at some point she's going to be able to get back to her son. So she's killing for the sake of her son. But her loop is interesting because we follow the same girl on, we follow the same version of Jess on multiple loops, but Jess's loop is longer than everybody else's loop. So she's still on her first loop.
Yeah.
Like, we only ever see her on one loop, but her loop, because she's a survivor of her group, she stays on the boat for multiple loops of her companions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So their loops are looping faster than hers.
Yeah, it's kind of like Time Crimes. I think we get 3 or 4 relative loops through Jess's eyes because we have her in her first experience, her sort of in the shadows, and then embracing the baghead character.
But it's all in her first loop because left the boat.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think what the message they give her is not to let them on the boat. Don't let them on the boat.
But where would she get that information?
I think it's just her assumption because she would think that the boat is the loop. That's what the movie is trying to establish to us. Like, if they don't get on the boat,
you've broken the loop.
You'll break the loop. Hopefully Coast Guard will come find you. You'll be rescued. You'll go back and see your son.
So what I was thinking in that instance, though, is that the Jess in this version is kind of like greater good, killing all these loop versions in hopes that the version of her that hasn't made it on the boat yet will then parent her son. Like, I don't know if she knows if she is ever going to be the version of her that gets to go and parent her son.
That is one of the problems with this movie is, and this is true about a lot of time travel movies, mm-hmm. It has that idea that, like, there's a loop, I need to lock into it, I need to complete the loop, but we don't necessarily get the why. Because she just accepts it and goes with it. Mm-hmm. I find that's what I love about Time Crimes because
there should be some ego in that scenario where she should have self-preservation and knowing that, like, she might not be the end version of her at the closing of the loop.
Yeah.
She might assume so because she's a human being that has what she thinks is free will and, mm-hmm. I just don't understand why she's so quick to, like, start killing people.
I don't. The killing people is the part that I don't quite get at all. Because I think the goal is don't get on the boat. Don't let them get on the boat. If I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not wrong. I hope it isn't don't let them leave the boat. Like, it could be way off. But I think the idea is the boat is the loop. Don't get on the boat. The boat is the scare zone. And I think I don't necessarily know why she has to clean up the bodies other than for us as viewers to have this loop where they're rediscovering
where there's a clean
scenes.
Loop at the beginning.
Yeah, because if the goal is don't let them on the boat, all you have to do if they get on the boat is kill them so the loop repeats. And then don't let them get on the boat.
Yeah, but it's just like, try again.
Yeah, it's like she doesn't get to the safety ladder fast enough to stop them. Because if she has a gun, it stands to reason that she could kill them any other way, set up traps, cage them, let them die of starvation, who gives a shit, and wait by the ladder, and then shoot at them as they attempt to go to the ladder to get on the boat. Like, at some point, the boat will pass them by.
Yeah, like, if there's just a baghead, like, shooting at them as they pass by that cruise ship, they're not gonna fucking board
it. Yeah, they might say, let's not get on that boat. But whatever. The interesting thing, though, is that, like every other baghead character, she fails. And in her failure, she tries to warn new Jess, don't let them get on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to stop them. And she gets pushed off like every other baghead character we've seen. But instead of dying or being eaten by seagulls like some of the other dead bodies that have been thrown overboard, she winds up on shore.
Yeah, and that almost seems inconsequential to anything that's happening on the boat. For her, all she needed to do was jump off the boat, maybe? Like,
yeah.
I don't know how she ends up on shore so, like, fine and dandy.
Well, I think it's the Bermuda Triangle. I think it's just supposed to be weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, she traveled
I don't know, 100 miles to shore, and you know, it only took a minute. Like, it's just weird.
Because it's still the same day, isn't it?
It's earlier that morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because she goes back in time.
Yeah. So she, in the morning before she goes to the boat, we have all these weird, like, not all of these weird things, but you know, somebody knocks on her door. There's nobody there. She gets a weird feeling when she's in the backyard. Like, there is an ominous sense of something going on in the beginning of the movie before she gets to the boat. And we see that again. She arrives. She's the person that knocks on the door. But she, in this way, we see her spying on herself, and we get more of a view of her morning. And we realize that
she's kind of a shit person.
Yeah, she's really not a great mom. And, you know, like, maybe she is, but
she's just exacerbated. She's at the end of her rope, and she hits her kid.
Yeah, I think she's in a dark place right now, and she's taking it out on her son. And it makes her very sad to see. And knowing that that's not the kind of person she wants to be, she sneaks into the house and fucking kills herself. Like, she kills the bad version of herself, which is technically a jest that we've never seen in the movie. Because from there, she loads her kid into the car, they go for a drive, they're gonna go on the boat, because everybody in the movie keeps saying, hey, where's Tommy? I thought you were gonna bring Tommy, but, oh, I left him at school today. And everybody just accepts that, and it's cool. We forget how weird she was in the beginning of the movie, but we find out, final moments of the movie, she hits a seagull, and it really disturbs her son. And this is another thing in the movie where it just kind
of
like...
lots of seagulls.
This has to happen.
Yeah.
The kid has to freak out. She has to go under the road and throw the seagull.
Yeah, like, we find out that she's still following her loop just the way she should be.
Yeah.
For this time loop to be existing.
Yeah, because there's like 100 dead seagulls down there. She's done this a bunch.
Yeah, so she realizes that in killing that version of herself and kidnapping her son, she has not broken the loop yet.
Nope.
And they get in a car accident. One, she's been awake for like 37 real hours.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
And her son dies. So motivation to get to the fucking boat.
And the body of the Jess that she has murdered in her house pops out of the trunk. And everybody, I guess, assumes that she was part of the car accident. So on paper, Jess and Tommy are dead.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got this otherworldly Jess who is just floating around now. But then a mysterious cab driver comes to pick her up.
That's the weirdest part of the movie, because you're just like, who are you?
This cab driver is definitely supernatural. Like, this is the ferryman, like, that brings her from one side of the shore to the other.
Yeah, he's just like, get back in your loop.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how
especially
I feel about that.
Time travel is always about answering all of these questions with, I say practical as if time travel is real, like plausible ways. So like, she's the one that's getting herself to the boat because she's killed her kid, and she's killed her kid because she's gone back to try to break the loop, whatever.
Yeah.
But then when you add this ferryman into it, it adds this like metaphysical element, which I don't like instantaneously, but as soon as you said ferryman, I was like, ooh, I think I'm into it.
Yeah, like that it's not so bad on face level. And like what I like about it is assuming that the boat is the loop. And the loop only exists in the boat. But because
and
she
like
escaped
that,
the boat
yeah.
and went to her house, the loop now
affected
exists.
The real
yeah,
world.
Yeah, it exists outside of just the boat.
Yeah.
Because not only is that continuing to happen for her, that's continuing to happen everywhere. Because
like every time there's a version of Jess that gets on the boat, it's the version of Jess that killed her son.
Yes. And she seems to forget that. When she gets to the boat.
Yeah, she seems so like, I've been here before, I'm doing this. And then it's the beginning of the film because she's got this like fugue state. She's in this weird amnesia.
The problem, I guess, is that it comes off as grief. It looks like she is distraught more than she is in a fugue state. And she's hit her head very hard, obviously. She falls asleep in the cab, which you shouldn't do with a head injury. She has a
especially
nap when
she
gets
the
on the boat.
Cab driver is like ominous as fuck.
Yeah, yeah, he's there.
He's
not
taking you to the ferry.
Oh man, so like, yeah, I guess she's supposed to have this head injury, and she's just supposed to not necessarily know where she is or what's going on. But it's played too much like grief to me.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's just how I'm seeing it.
I definitely get the grief when we watch it the second time, when we bookend the movie with the beginning.
Yeah.
It feels like grief.
Yeah.
But the first time, it's just, she just seems like a sad, lost person.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, sad, lost, like, something has gone wrong is what I'm seeing in it.
Okay.
And I will say, I did not necessarily remember the Tommy stuff. I figured, like, oh, at some point we're going to deal with that and see how that figures into it. I'd forgotten that she kills herself and that she gets into a car accident with her son, so I wasn't necessarily remembering the ending going into the movie. But it did seem like something went wrong. Tommy is not okay. Or something, right?
As soon as they mentioned her kid, I was like, oh, the son's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you really only bring up kids in horror movies like this if something bad's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
You got to remind them that they're there, so that way when you're, oh, right, the kid. Oh, God, the kid.
Yeah. But what I think is so interesting about this movie is the fact that the loops exist within her own loop. Like, how long she's on the boat, and then for us to realize her loop begins and ends back on the land.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So actually what is kind of interesting about this movie is that all of those friends die and their loop starts again. She is always all of herself because she never dies. That's the thing.
Yeah.
She never dies. She goes on the boat. She does, you know, a few rounds of the baghead character, and then she goes off the boat onto the shore, back home, back on the boat. She doesn't stop. She's in fucking hell. And maybe that's one way to look at it. She died in a car accident with her son on the way to the boat to go sailing for the day. The ferryman, instead of taking her to a nice happy place, which is probably where her son went, the cab driver, the ferryman, brings her to her own personal hell. And that is this long day.
Where she has to kill her friends over and over again.
Yeah.
In sake of saving her son, who she could never, ever save.
And then herself. And there's some redemption, like, I'm a good person. And then she gets that for 5 minutes, maybe. Before the thing that she was trying to protect from herself dies in her hands, basically.
Fuck.
This movie got better.
Yeah, that just
this movie just got better. What the hell?
Man, I think you just added a star to my rating, John.
God damn.
Fuck. The only thing I can't answer is why she starts killing people on the fucking boat.
It comes from self-defense, right? Like, it starts as self-defense. It starts as, like, recognizing something that's supposed to happen. And there are a few instances where she's not killing people so much as she's trying to, like, scare them.
Yeah.
But then it just becomes, like,
the thing that gets
war.
Me is when she goes to the boot of the boat, or whatever you call it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
The
aft.
The
I think the aft is, like, the back left corner.
The bowels of the boat.
Sure.
It's called
the bowels.
It is called the bowels. There's, like, a locker room for, I guess, like, the coal guys, like, the low-level guys. And there's, like, a shotgun and shotgun shells. And there are these moments where she's, like, putting the jacket on and she's filling the shotgun
just, like,
and stuff.
Committing to it.
Yeah, and you're just like, are we here yet? Have we dissented this far?
That's the thing. It's because she's getting messages from herself. And she sees so many lockets. And, like, what wouldn't a mother do to see her son again? And so I guess what we have to remember now, having seen the whole movie, is that that person... No, that's not even true. I was going to say, that person knows that her son is dead.
She doesn't.
That's exactly. So she would have motivation to go back and fix the past if she remembered that, but she doesn't. You're right. By giving her some sort of amnesia, it negates any motivation for her to go quote-unquote crazy and kill people.
Mm-hmm.
If we can still have all those moments, and it even makes the ending darker, because she's like, yeah, let's do this. I'm willing to kill all of you to see my son again. That's cool.
The only instinct she has that is when she's walking away from the crash, right? That's the only moment where she has that feeling, because that's the only moment where she has all of the awareness of the previous loop.
Yes.
And then it for some reason, it disappears on the way to the boat. Because, like, we know her headspace at the beginning of the film. She's not aware. She's killed her son.
No.
She might have some kind of, like, subconscious memory of it.
Just trauma. Like, something.
Yeah.
Something's not right. Something's gone wrong. I had a really strange nightmare, but I can't place
but,
it.
But, like, let's spend a day boating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else is ready to just drink champagne in the fucking sun. And she's just like, is it okay if I lie down a little bit? Like, that's fine and all, but, like, you do not look like you're going to be the life of the party. I think you should stay here.
Yeah.
Well, goddamn, this is why this podcast is important to us. Like, because, and, like, this is why we've always liked talking about movies. Like, you go see a movie, you have an impression on it, and you talk about it for an hour over pie, over microphones, whatever you're into. Yeah, and all of a sudden you learn things about it that you never thought you would appreciate.
Yeah, I didn't have any idea of it being, like, Like a perpetual hell kind of thing.
The director is listening to this podcast thinking, you don't understand you my movie. you missed everything. This, none of this is right.
So I have to say, though, that the whether or not I agreed with the murder and stuff, the visuals of the dead Sallys.
Oh, man.
In that one.
So great.
Upper deck. Fucking worth the whole middle of the movie.
It's great.
It's one of the greatest images in horror. And it's so crazy that I rarely hear about this movie talked about.
Occasionally it'll come up, though, and you get the...
And people are just like, Because it's so easy to underestimate. Like, it doesn't... I don't think it was on anybody's radar.
It was also on Netflix for a very long time. It might be in the States, I'm not sure. It's not here in Canada anymore.
It's on Roku, if you have Roku.
We found it on Roku.
Do you remember what channel?
On Popcorn Flix.
Popcorn Flix. Yeah, you just gotta watch it with a ton of Christmas ads.
Oh, man. Those ad blocks are crazy. They come every 15 minutes.
Five of the same commercial.
Yeah, you're...
Oh, we had a lot of Uber Eats ads.
There are some good
Uber Eats
ads.
I like that Uber Eats guy. I hope he gets, like, Old Spice Big.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so sweet.
It is good. It's like just like a day in the life of an Uber driver. And he's a funny guy.
When he gets stuck on that... porch where they're caroling.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
There's some good comedic beats in it. I like it a lot. But it is very strange to watch the same ad 30 times during a movie. I wonder if it works effectively. Because we're here talking about it. We remembered it.
Yeah. I have all the beats of that commercial.
We ordered a pizza last night. Not on Uber Eats. It did make us want fast food, I guess.
All right. So what is your rating of the triangle?
My rating of the triangle is a solid 2.5. That's how I'm sitting.
Out of what?
Out of four. I did not expect to rate the movie that high. As we've talked about it, I appreciate it a little bit more than I did. And yeah, there are some great visuals in this movie.
I have to say, John, for being the time travel expert on the podcast, the self-proclaimed time travel lover.
Oh, yeah.
I'm giving this out of four. I rated both of these movies higher than you.
I'm just, I've just OD'd on time travel movies.
I'm just along for the ride, and I just appreciate all the perpetual sadness.
Hey, you guys want some time travel recommendations? Hit me up on Twitter. I've seen them all. I love them all. They're all great. There's a really good one that was hitting the festival circuit in 2019 called The Incredible Shrinking Weekend, and it's my new favorite. It's very, 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 very
Question
good.
For you.
Yeah.
Jacob's Ladder. Is that a time travel movie?
Absolutely not.
But is it?
No.
Could you argue?
It's a fever dream movie. Could you argue? So he doesn't really repeat a lot of scenes. He just goes about his regular day, has a nightmare, like a nightmare experience.
Okay, I've got another one for you.
Got it. Let's
David
rapid
Lynch
fire.
Movies. Are they all time travel movies?
Ooh, shit.
Twin Peaks, time travel, yes or no?
So the only episode that really makes it feel like a time travel episode is the very last episode of season 3.
Oh, so the thesis of the
It's
film.
Possible. I mean, there's also that thing where, like, Agent Cooper goes into, like, the weird glass box right before the monster eats everybody's faces. I'm gonna say no. That's more like a Cool World scenario where, like, real-life characters are interacting with real-life people. TLDR, my Twin Peaks theory, I think... Twin Peaks: The Return sees the characters become real people. Like, that's the best way I could describe
it. What about that scene in Lost Highway with that creepy guy at that party?
Okay, so so it's not even necessarily, like, the pale-faced man that, like, makes Lost Highway a time travel movie. By the way, Nacho Vigalondo thinks the Lost Highway is the best movie ever made, so I'm sure it's a huge influence on his own films.
Ooh, we brought that full circle.
Thank you. The Lost Highway itself is kind of like the...
I like how intense you're getting. It feels like the room just had a bunch of coffee.
I can't remember the name of it. The Mobius Strip. So Lost Highway.
Oh, God.
Kind of like a Mobius Strip where you can travel...
What the fuck is a Mobius Strip, John?
Okay. Everybody take out a pen and paper.
You can't just drop Mobius Strip, like, in the middle of a sentence.
Okay, so a Mobius Strip is like a figure eight loop, right? And it's got two surfaces.
Oh, like an impossible shape.
Yes, and you if you were to drive, if it were a road and you drove in one direction, you would drive on both sides of the road and eventually repeat back to where you were. The easiest way to do it is to cut a piece of paper, twist it together, now you have a Mobius strip because it makes a figure eight, and if you travel your hand across it, you go across the top and then seamlessly across what your brain perceives as the bottom until
you're
back on the top.
So you think everything David Lynch does is a Mobius strip?
I will say that I think Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive are kind of the thesis of almost all of his films. Not all of them, obviously. We got Elephant Man, we got Wild at Heart. They're a little different, but he is kind of doing the Mobius strip thing. And from what I understand, a lot of it comes from the idea that a person can believe they are something they are not, and then believe that so hard that they become that. Like, you got any other ones?
I don't know. I think Mobius is kind of time travel-y.
Mobius is kind of time travel-y. They are definitely kissing cousins.
Let us know what you think of time travel, time crimes, triangle, whatever you've got, Mobius strips, David Lynch. We now have a hotline, and you can call and leave us a voicemail. Just ring us at 705-400-9415. And you don't even have to talk about this week's podcast. If you have an opinion on a previous episode, if you have a hot take, if you want to promote your movie, or you just have a question or something to say, call, leave us a voicemail. You got like 2 minutes. And if you're lucky, if we love it, if it's hilarious and weird, you might hear it on a future episode of Nightmare on Film Street.
And you can hear more Nightmare on Film Street at patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street. It's where we have our archive of all of our backlog episodes.
Those early terrible recordings of Nightmare on Film Street.
I don't even know why I bring it up. I don't actually want you to listen to it. But anyway, it's all over there at patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street, where we also have a lot of good content. Bonus episodes. Drive home from the drive-in reviews of your favorite new in theater films right now.
You can support us at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
And of course, you can just let us know what you thought of this week's episode, your other favorite time travel movies, on Twitter at NOFSpodcast. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nightmare on Film Street. And of course, why not join us in the subreddit at reddit.com/r/nightmareonfilmstreet. I hang out mostly in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS.
We'll be back at you again next Thursday with another episode. But until then, I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. But we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, NOFSpodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.